Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right. This is the heartbeat of conservative talk on the web. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take ourselves too seriously. We don't tolerate callers or sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to be back. I've been gone for a while. I don't think I've sat behind the microphone for well over a month. And I haven't been to church in 2 months. Well, I mean, I haven't been to my church in 2 months. And before we get started, I think it would be appropriate to thank all the petitioners in Colorado who gathered the signatures needed to put personhood on the ballot for a third consecutive election cycle. Very good job. I want to especially thank Susan Sutherland, who was, I believe, she signed on as the petition coordinator, but she actually became the chief petition carrier and did an amazing job. I want to thank especially also Leslie Hanks and John Sutherland and Agnostic Drew Heimer. That's right, one of the leading signature gatherers here in the state of Colorado. To put the question of when does a person become a person on the ballot in Colorado, one of the leading signature gatherers is not even a Christian, just an agnostic database computer guy, proving the old axiom, you don't have to be a Christian to be against stomping puppies or strangling kittens or killing babies. Just have to be a basic, decent human being. Don't have to be a religious scholar nor a theologian to be able to answer the question of when does a person become a person. And it's always been my opinion that if there is a God, and trust me, there is a God, and you're going to meet him, if it's up to me to draw that line, I'm going to draw it as early as possible to avoid any possible conflicts with the Almighty. So thank you to the petitioners, and especially to the people I've mentioned here at the top. And I also want to thank my extremely attractive audio engineer. My extremely attractive audio engineer, one of the world's most introverted people, who when you get a petition in her hand, trying to ask people to put this question on the ballot, becomes an extreme extrovert, and you better get out of her way. She did a great job. And my daughter, Nicole, did a great job as well, always under the supervision of her parents. And while we're doling out thanks, I want to thank Mayor Menino out in Boston. I want to thank Mayor Lee out in San Francisco. And, of course, big shout-out to Rahm Emanuel in Chicago for their attack on Chick-fil-A, which coalesced millions of Christians to be in one place on one day. And here in Colorado, hundreds of thousands of Christians converged on Chick-fil-A just days before our deadline, enabling us to build the approximately 30% cushion that we will need to get this issue on the ballot. Oh, yeah, the Chick-fil-A thing was great. It was something else. The McBurney clan, we logged 739 signatures in one day at Chick-fil-A. The same day Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Lee and Menino were all screaming about how much they love homosexuals and don't want Chick-fil-A in their neighborhood. Well, just thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate your help. See you on Judgment Day, okay? Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. So is that all we've got on person? I think I have one other story, and I got a lot of stuff to go through. Some of these stories are a little old, but I think they're relevant, so I'm going to give them to you anyways, because, like I say, you may have heard the news, but you haven't heard my take, and until you hear that, well, it's just not the full story. So let's dive in. Since I've already mentioned marriage and the open warfare that is occurring in the culture on a daily basis regarding what is a marriage and what defines a family, I want to start in Las Vegas, Nevada. Denny's. You all familiar with Denny's, right? Denny's is the restaurant where you can get breakfast 24 hours a day from tattooed, laden, facially pierced weirdos who will come out and serve you a half-decent pancake. Well, Denny's says, this is according to CBS in Las Vegas, Denny's says its newest diner in Las Vegas will feature a full bar and a wedding chapel. A wedding chapel at Denny's. They say the restaurant will also offer a range of wedding packages at its on-site chapel. Some including wedding cakes made of Denny's pancake puppies. Wedding, yes. I know it is laughable, isn't it? But after all, it is Las Vegas. And everybody knows that marriages in Las Vegas just don't last. Well, there's some that do. How long ago was that we rolled into Vegas and we couldn't afford... We rolled into Vegas, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, rolled into Las Vegas with just enough gas money to get home. And we couldn't afford any of the chapels. I think the cheapest chapel was like $80, which to us, that was a fortune. And so we went to the Justice of the Peace, and I think for about $15, we managed to tie the knot there at the Clark County Courthouse, which is now a museum, as well it should be, seeing as we got married there. And that was 21 years ago. 21 years ago this very summer. So don't say that all weddings in Vegas don't last, but I just want to talk about this this Denny's wedding chapel. It just struck me that, you know, this is the state of marriage. I mean, in Las Vegas, for that matter, in America. I mean, it's the equivalent to a meal at a diner. You can take it or leave it. You know, it's no wonder the queers are having so much success in perverting and corrupting marriage and planting questions in the minds of young people about marriage. When the heterosexuals have abused marriage and left it for dead on the side of the road with no-fault divorce, rampant adultery, it's no wonder marriage is collapsing. And you might as well get married at a Denny's in Las Vegas because, well, I guess I don't have much more to say about that. I've never been a big Denny's fan anyways.
Well, I wish I had a breakfast after that.
That would have been nice to have breakfast. Yes. Yes, it was one of my wife's lifelong dreams to go to Caesar's Palace. So after the big wedding, I changed out of my tux, and she changed out of her extremely elaborate gown. And we went to Caesar's Palace, and I believe we spent about $20 in the slot machines.
Now, Keno.
Oh, yeah, and Keno. That's right. We didn't know anything. We played Keno. We didn't hit it big. And I said, babe, we got to go. We need this last $15 for gas to get home. And the rest is history. All right, speaking of history, let's go to the science. Really? File. Let's go to Germany from the local in Germany, a website there. And a study published in the current edition of the science journal Nature. Researchers from Prases Goethe University and Biodiversity and Climate Research Center there in Frankfurt report how rock samples from drill probes off the coast of Wilkes Island, Antarctica, contain evidence that a period of intense warmness had occurred around 52 million years ago. That's Antarctica, I said, and intense warmness around 52 million years ago. You know, give or take 52 million years, it was right back there. Let's see, the interval... Scientists say that the interval corresponding to 52 million years ago was encountered at 980 meters below the sea floor. Now, how do they know that 980 meters below the sea floor correlates to 52 million years ago? Well, it's turtles all the way down, folks. You have to take their word for it because you and I are simply not members of the secular high priesthood of scientists who have determined what is and what isn't 50 million or 100 million or 225 million years ago. Just take our word for it. You're not smart enough to question it. Anyway, scientists hope that studying the naturally occurring climate warm periods in our geological past will help improve our knowledge of current human-induced global warming. And so the reporters here at the local... there in Germany, they completely missed the point of the story in that, Antarctica at one point was a tropical rainforest, which is of interest to me, whether it was 5,200 years ago or 52 million years ago. I don't know that we were belching greenhouse gases into the air. And I'd like to find out exactly what was going on in Antarctica sometime in the distant past to make it tropical. That's just pretty cool. Anyway, climatologists stress the importance of cutting fossil fuel output to put the brakes on Antarctica becoming a sunny holiday destination once again. And my question is, what would be wrong with that? Oh, well, that's right. The polar ice caps would melt and we would lose some coastline. But then we would gain other coastline. Fargo, North Dakota could have a beach. What would be wrong with that? So we lose Florida, we lose the East Coast. Okay, I think it's going to happen over like 2,000 years. I think people would start walking inland, right? I don't know that anybody's going to die. And it might just get warm no matter what we do. That just might be what's going to happen. Anyway, just really cool to think that Antarctica, a barren wasteland of ice, was once tropical. That's just really cool. All right, so, but this fantasy about 52 million years ago, I'm sorry, it just doesn't hold water. You should, if you haven't yet gone, definitely go to youngearth.org if you'd like to just see several simple, easily understood pieces of evidence for a young Earth under 10,000 years old. Really cool website, youngearth.org. Let me make a note here to put a link to that new website, because you're going to want to go to that. And so I'll put that up on the website after the big show today. All right, now, so you go to youngearth.org and get information on debunking the myth, the fantasy, that the world is millions of years old and the universe is billions of years old. It's all a fantasy. Yeah. You know, like Nancy Pelosi in the White House. Yes. Nancy Pelosi. I said it. Yes. I uttered her name. Pelosi says the spirits were speaking with her when she was in the White House. This is from CNSnews.com. Nancy Pelosi told a recent gathering of the Women's Political Committee, that the spirits of suffragists Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and Alice Paul spoke to her at the White House. Yeah. She said, as she was sitting there listening to George W. Bush drone on about something or other, she said, "I felt like my chair was getting crowded in. I swear this happened. Never happened before, and it never has happened since." Now, as soon as someone says, "I swear this happened," so right then I have a grain of salt on hand. Yeah. As soon as they say, "I swear," you can bet that they're about to make something up out of whole cloth. Yeah. Especially when it's someone like Nancy Pelosi and her eyes are and she's blinking at 90 miles an hour. She's got rapid eye movement and she's allegedly wide awake. She says her chair, "My chair was getting crowded in and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, Alice Paul, Sojourner Truth, you name it, they were all in my chair, they were. More than I named, and I could hear them say, 'At least we have a seat at the table.' And then the spirits were gone. They were gone." Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the most powerful political leaders in the country had a spirit visitation in the White House, and she's still being taken seriously by people in the news media and the government and your average person on the street to this very day. I would just have to say that I think if Susan B. Anthony sat down in a chair with Nancy Pelosi, the first thing she would ask her is, "Why do you support killing all those black babies?" Because Susan B. Anthony she was pro-life before being pro-life was even cool. Yeah, it was Susan B. Anthony. Indeed. Yeah. So there we have it. A demented Nancy Pelosi. Demented years ago. This is back during the Bush administration. Who knows how far around the bend she is now? But people still listen to her as if she is to be taken seriously. All right. So we move from the fantasy world of the evolutionists and the progressive, wicked, evil politicians. We move to the real world of the war. This is from the Daily Mail. Over in London, three American service members were killed by an alleged member of the Afghan police this past week. The victims were Special Operations Force troops. A man in an Afghan army uniform shot and killed three Americans in southern Afghanistan, and an Afghan civilian employed on a NATO base shot dead three international coalition soldiers this Friday past. Two Fridays ago, I should say. So I ask myself the question, why have we lost the war in Afghanistan? And the answer is fairly simple. At least, now I know some of you would argue that we haven't lost the war in Afghanistan, we haven't lost the war in Iraq, and in fact we've done a great and wonderful thing. But I would beg to differ. I think we have lost the war in Afghanistan, and Iraq will be lost. And the reason is simple, is because we pursued a war without any moral authority to remake the nations we've defeated in our own image. We don't have the moral authority to do that because we're corrupt. Our government, our form of government, has become completely corrupt. Not only is it wicked, but it's evil. And evil is a malignant type of wickedness. Evil is a malignant type of wickedness that infects other entities, and that's what America has become. We'll never win a war again unless we find our way back to the God that inspired our founding. Not to put too fine a point on it, the war is lost, and it's a shame because a lot of lives have been lost. A lot of blood and treasure has been expended, and we've basically helped to lay the foundation for the caliphate. So anyway, if you're thinking about joining the military, I would suggest you think again. You might want to join the personhood movement before you join the military, because there's a much greater need for the restoration of the foundations of this nation via the reestablishment of the God-given right to life of every innocent human being, rather than joining up with Barry's forces and installing the caliphate. I'm standing on my deck. Getty, pipe down a little bit. All right. Now, I'm standing on my deck in my backyard just after dark the other night, and my sprinklers came on. And because of the lighting, a mist just billowed up from the ground, up above eye level, even up into the trees, this mist. The whole backyard was awash in this mist, and I was reminded of Genesis. In fact, let's go there. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever even dare contemplate thinking about the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. From Genesis in the second chapter, this is the story of the heavens and the earth when they were created, in the day the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown. For the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground, but a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. And I contemplated civilization and how we fallen human beings go through cycles in which we claw our way up from savagery to once in a while achieve something approaching the glory that God intended to be on the earth. And that's what modern irrigation to me is. It's a crude attempt to do what God had intended from the very beginning. And so that's the kind of stuff I contemplate when I'm standing around my deck and the sprinklers come on. And actually, I just told that whole story just so I could quote that verse from Genesis. Genesis is one of my favorite books of all time. And true, by the way. So there. All right. Now, since we're talking about a religious topic, sort of. Let's talk about voting for Mitt Romney. Apparently, a group of so-called Christian leaders, are they Christians? Let me see here. David Barton. I know he claims to be a Christian. Matt Barber. I'm not sure who that guy is, but it says here he's a Christian in this article from rightwingwatch.org, who are not Christians. They're a bunch of heathen atheist scum. And let's see, isn't there someone else here? David Barton, Matt Barber. Anyway, they're on a radio show. Barber and Green. Oh, Green. Who's Green? Rick Green. Apparently he's a Christian, too. Jordan Seculo onto their Wall Builders program. Anyway, they're on this radio show that I've never heard of, Wall Builders Radio. And they're all talking about the fact that not voting for Mitt Romney for a Christian is a sin. They all agree. These three alleged Christian leaders agree that not voting for Mitt Romney is a sin. And how do they base their judgment? Well, they ask the questions such as this. Who's more biblical on judges? And they all answer, Romney. Who's more biblical on marriage? Romney. Who's more biblical on the life issue? Romney. And so, first of all, Mr. Barton, Mr. Green, Mr. Barber, and maybe Jordan Seculo is involved. I don't really know. The triumvirate, the quadumvirate, who have declared that not voting for Mitt Romney is a sin. Where do you get the term more biblical? I mean, someone's either biblical or they're not biblical. It's not a more biblical or a less biblical kind of thing. Is Mitt Romney biblical on the life issue? Well, he instituted taxpayer-funded abortion in Massachusetts. I don't think had Barack Obama been able to do that. I don't recall he was able to do that. Who's more biblical on marriage? Mitt Romney. Go Romney. So Romney instituted homosexual marriage in Massachusetts, the first governor in the history of the country to do that. And I don't think Barack Obama has ever done that. Now, I'm not saying that Barack wouldn't do it. I'm just saying he has not, and Mitt has. So let's see. David Barton says, you've got to pay attention to Scripture. He quotes James in the 4th chapter, when you know what's right to do and you don't do it, that is a sin. So, apparently, I am on the verge of a major league sin because I'm not going to vote for Mitt Romney. Now, I'm not going to vote for Barack Obama. I'm not sure if I'm even going to vote for president. I have to see who's on the ballot here in Colorado. But when you know what's right to do and you don't do it, that's a sin. Well, Mitt Romney was a sitting governor and could have stood in the gap as homosexual marriage and taxpayer-funded abortion was foisted upon his state. He could have stood up, could have been brave, could have taken the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune and stood against it and said no, but he didn't do it. So he knew what was right, or at least he says he knows what's right, but he didn't do it. And so I think Mitt Romney sinned, and so I'm not going to vote for Mitt, not going to vote for Barry. I don't know who's on the ballot out here. I am going to vote for personhood because no innocent child in the womb has ever sinned against me or anybody else, frankly. So I know my vote is safe and that I will not be judged as sinful in that respect. And for the rest of you who think not voting for Mitt is a sin, well, we'll catch up on Judgment Day and we'll find out who was right, okay? All right. More from the politics file. A group of black pastors has apparently become a little bit uncomfortable with how close Barry is shimmying up alongside the homosexuals. You know, they were okay with his socialism. They were okay with his racist rhetoric. But now that he's moseying on really close up to the queers, some of these black pastors are like, wait a minute, brother. Hold on now. I mean, I can go some of that, but wait a minute. I can walk with you a mile, brother, but not next to that there queer. Now, come on. Anyway, the Reverend William Owens, who's president and founder of the Coalition of African American Pastors, has highlighted opposition to same-sex marriage among African Americans. He calls, he's starting a campaign. He calls it an effort to save the family. This is from CNN, their political ticker blog. At a press conference recently, Owens was joined by five other black regional pastors and said there were over 3,000 African-American pastors on board for the anti-Obama campaign. That's right. Now, they're going to hold their first fundraiser on August 16th out there in Memphis, Tennessee, and they're going to raise money to, I don't know, they're going to try to save the family. I'm not sure how they do that, but I'm all for them trying. I'm trying myself, but on a more personal level. I'm just trying to save my own family. And I'll be willing to help save yours if you give me an opportunity, but most people, they don't want to hear it. Okay, back to the Right Reverend Williams. I'm sorry, the Right Reverend William Owens. In a fiery press conference, Owens said Obama was taking the black vote for granted and decried the idea of similarities between the gay rights movement and the civil rights movement. Hallelujah, finally a black minister stands up and says, wait a minute, Barry, what you doing lumping us in with the quiz? Come on, brother. Man, finally, I've been asking that question for the better part of a decade. How is it that black people don't stand up and say, wait a minute, we have a high melanin content in our skin, but we're not perverted deviants? Please compare these movements. So anyway, finally, Barry, having come out for homosexual marriage, has finally triggered a schism in the black community, thankfully. It's finally happened. Oh, listen to this. At the press conference, the Right Reverend Owens said that Obama's support of same-sex marriage is tantamount to supporting child molestation. Praise the Lord. I'm with you on that, brother. I mean, I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with you all day on that one. And in fact, I have another story that I was going to do in a different order. But let's see if we can find the story. Aha, the story of one Jerry Sandusky, speaking of child molesters. This is from WorldNet Daily, from Michael Haverluck. He says in this article from this past week that outspoken proponents of homosexuality, such as those who attacked the CEO of Chick-fil-A for expressing his Christian faith, are remarkably quiet on the issue of former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky. I haven't heard a single queer activist pipe up about the fact that Jerry Sandusky is just another in a long line of older men molesting young boys. Speaking of an epidemic, Jerry Sandusky. Well, Michael Brown, who's the syndicated radio talk show host, he hosts a show called Line of Fire that I've never heard of. Now, this isn't the same Michael Brown who's on here in Denver. No. I don't know. Anyway, there's a guy here in Denver. He just got a radio show. His name's Michael Brown. He was the former head of FEMA. He was the one who George Bush slapped on the back and said, great job, Brownie, while all those people were dying in the streets down there in New Orleans during Katrina. Anyway, this Michael Brown here in Denver, they were talking about personhood because we shocked the political world here in Colorado by delivering more than enough signatures for a third consecutive cycle to put this question on the ballot. So Michael Brown is talking about it on his alleged radio show. And he said, I believe that life begins at conception, but I can't say what that life is. And I thought to myself, this has got to be embarrassing. Here's a man who's easily over 60 years old, and he doesn't know what that life is. I ask my 5-year-old and she knows. So to Michael Brown of Denver Radio, I would just ask you to examine yourself because something happened to you between first grade and wherever you are now that you've completely lost all semblance of any intelligence. And you're a pretty lousy radio host to boot. Frankly, unlistenable. But this is a different Michael Brown. Let's get back to the story here. I've gone off track. Let's get back to the story. Michael Brown, a host of the nationally syndicated radio talk show Line of Fire, says this. Since homosexual activists push so hard for gay-straight alliances in schools, many of which have clearly introduced younger boys to older homosexual men, it's difficult for gay activists to take the high moral ground when it comes to exposing and condemning a guy like Sandusky. They can't say anything because this is what they advocate, whether openly or in their typical subversive fashion. It's all about cruising for young boys. That's what it's about. The Gay Straight Alliance is about cruising. The American Family Association alleges that former Penn State President Graham Spanier supported the homosexual lifestyle on campus like never before. And they say what cannot be ignored is the homosexual connection. All Sandusky's victims were young boys. Now, Spanier, who's the president who moved heaven and earth to set up as many gay, straight, lesbian, queer, freak alliances on campus as he could. What's his name? Graham Spanier. He's no longer the president of Penn State. He has been removed. But he is still a tenured member of the Penn State faculty. Yeah. Trustees terminated him as president, but he gets to keep his tenure and he gets to keep his big fat pension when he should be arrested, frankly. And by the way, do you remember how loud the queers spoke up about the Catholics when they were the Catholic priests molesting those boys? You couldn't shut the fags up about that. But Jerry Sandusky, it's crickets. Cheep, cheep, cheep. You could hear crickets. You could hear a pin drop when it comes to Jerry Sandusky, proving that the homosexual lobby, the homosexual activists, hell-bent on destroying everything that is good and decent about the family and America, they may be loud, but they're still just hypocrites. Find a point on it there, Mr. Cornell, but I would agree. The wreck is going down. It's new damage done. And it's my opinion that the Sandusky case is just the tip of the iceberg. Perhaps I've already said that on the air. I'm beginning to repeat myself. It's probably a sign that it's time to cancel the show. I start repeating myself. It's only the tip of the iceberg, folks, when the lid comes off the amount of immorality going on in the institutes of higher learning. I think we'll all be shocked and disgusted. And I think that the covers are going to be pulled back over the next days and weeks as we begin to see the fruit of all the seeds that have been planted by the progressive, liberal, homosexual, antichrist forces who dominate the educational establishment. All right, now let's get back to politics. This is from CBS in Washington, D.C. The Democrat Party is moving to include support for gay marriage in the official party platform for the first time. That's right. And CBS says this marks a milestone for advocates of same-sex unions. And this, I'm not talking about, you know, welders and pipe fitters who are of the same sex starting a union. No. We're talking about queers marrying queers, men marrying men, doing what is, well, frankly, we don't even want to get into that. No. Anyway, so the Democrats are going to put homosexual marriage as a plank in their official party platform. And one thing I can guarantee you people is that the Democrats will do something about it. Unlike the Republican hypocrite liars who put a pro-life plank in their platform back some 30 years ago and have done nothing to stem the tide of innocent blood that has been shed, you can bet the Democrats will stand up at every opportunity to institute homosexual marriage and to foist it upon the normal, the rest of us, the normal people in society. They will do something about it. It's a big story, right? Yeah, I've got a quote here from Chad Griffin, president of the Human Rights Campaign. What does he think about the Democrat Party putting homosexual marriage in their official party platform? Well, Chad says, quote, "I believe that one day, very soon, the platforms of both major parties will include similar language. There is no more American value than honoring and protecting one's family." Unquote. That's Chad, president of Human Rights Campaign, which is a group advocating for deviance and perversion in all sectors of life. That's what they're up to. So the battle rages, and we continue to march forward. Here's some good news. Some good news from the Culture File, which is fairly rare these days. It's from CNN, from their religion blog. A letter penned by two notable scholars, a Christian and a Muslim, and sent to a number of different hotel industry executives, has asked those hotels to please remove pornography from their in-room movie selections. Yeah. Yeah, Robert P. George, who's a professor at Princeton, and Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, co-founder of Zaytuna College, which is a Muslim school, wrote the letter to urge hotels to, quote, "please do what is right as a matter of conscience," unquote. Now, well, that's pretty good news, I must say. They say, "We urge you to do away with pornography in your hotels because it is morally wrong. It is morally wrong to seek to profit from the suffering, degradation, or corruption of others. You are placing temptation in their path, temptation for the sake of profit. That is unjust. Moreover, the fact that something is chosen freely does not make it right." Wow. That's heavy duty. That is profound, profound. And I like the fact that they said that they needed to stop because they need them to do the right thing. They said it's morally wrong. This is a matter of conscience, calling on people who are doing evil, calling on them to do what is morally right. And these hotel presidents or CEOs or whatever, they probably can't even comprehend what this letter means. They have absolutely no idea. So far are we removed from any moral foundation in the business practices, in business practices in America today. We are so far removed that they probably handed this letter to some lawyers and they said, "We don't understand." And the lawyers looked at it and they said, "We don't really understand it either." And and then they turned on some pornography, whatever. They upgraded their Comcast subscription. Greg Gross, pastor and founder of the XXXChurch.com, says the letter is an empty gesture with no power behind it. This guy's a pervert, a creep. He starts a XXX church, and I don't know what that website's about, but I don't recommend you go. He says, "This has got to be one of the dumbest letters I've ever read. It's like asking the internet to stop selling porn." Well, how about we ask the internet people to stop? How about we do that? It's like asking the internet to stop selling porn. It sounds good and all, but it isn't going to happen. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Gross from XXX Church. It is going to happen. Yeah, it might not be until Jesus returns and shuts off the spigot of the filth that's being pumped into the houses and hotels across America, but it is going to stop. Now, I would like to see it stop of our own volition, because when Jesus comes and stops, he's not going to ask. No, he's not going to ask that it be stopped. He's going to stop it. So the only problem I have with this letter that the good Mr. George and Mr. Yusuf wrote is that they do not specifically mention the name of God. And when you're in a battle like this, and I haven't read the whole letter, maybe somewhere in the letter they did mention God, because this one statement I just read you was absolutely profound. Maybe they did mention God, but when you're in a battle like this, a moral battle where you're trying to call upon people's consciences and their moral compass and to do what's right, if you leave out the name of the living God, you're not invoking the power necessary to actually make something like this happen. All right. Do I want to read anything more from... all that's left is more quotes from the founder of Triple X Church.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily interested in giving him any more press time. Just get out of here with that. Go back to your dirty website, you filthy pervert. Go to hell. I shouldn't say. That's mean. Isn't it? Well, if he doesn't stop doing that, he's going to go to hell. So there. I'll just leave it at that. All right. Now, this next story is from the... I'm not even sure what to call this file. I've been trying to think of where does this fall in the socio-political cultural spectrum. And all I can think to call it is the no duh file. No duh. The headline, teenagers can be corrupted by Hollywood sex scenes. There's a new study. Now, they did a study on this, folks. A study based on nearly 700 popular films found that watching love scenes could, quote, fundamentally influence a teenager's personality.
What?
No duh.
I never thought that.
It never entered my mind that watching sex on TV and films could possibly corrupt youngsters. Fortunately, my dear, someone's done a study. So now we have the data. Yes, this is from The Telegraph in London. Researchers from Dartmouth concluded that for every hour of exposure to sexual content on screen, participants were more than 5 times more likely to lose their virginity within 6 years. That's right. The study indicates that adolescents who are exposed to more sexual content in movies start having sex at younger ages, have more partners, and have more casual partners. Well, no duh. I mean, did you really have to fund a study at Dartmouth, people? Please. More from The Telegraph. This study and its confluence with other work strongly suggests that parents need to restrict their children from seeing sexual content in movies at young ages. Wrong answer. That is wrong answer. That's Dr. Ross O'Hara, who led the study. So that's what he thinks is the conclusion of the study. We need to restrict our children from seeing sexual content. No, Mr. O'Hara, it suggests that parents need to press for the elimination of sexual content in movies. We as parents need to stand up and say, stop pumping this filth into our homes and into our hotels and into our lives. We don't need to restrict our kids. We need to stop the flow. Okay? We already restrict our kids enough. We have to tell our kids no 1,000 different ways to try to protect them from the perverts out there peddling their filth. We don't need to restrict our kids anymore. We need to stop the flow of filth. And it's going to stop, you filthy heathens. You just wait. You'll be begging that I stopped it if it comes to the point where Jesus Christ comes to stop it. You'll be begging. You'll be begging for the Christians to have stopped it. You'll be calling for the mountains to fall down upon you is how terrified you will be when Jesus comes to shut off your filth spigot. All right. We have more from this article. The findings in the study, according to The Telegraph, provided a link between exposure to sex on screen and sexual behavior. Okay. So it's not the missing link. They're saying there is a link. There's a link to exposure to sex on screen and sexual behavior. So they've noticed this link because anyone with half a brain already knew. I wonder how much money they collected to do this study. I mean, please, people. This is embarrassing, frankly, that, where is it? Dartmouth? Where's Dartmouth? It's in New Hampshire. This is in America. I was hoping maybe this was Europe, but it's America. Unbelievable. I mean, do you really want to send your kids to college, ladies and gentlemen? You got Jerry Sandusky. You got literate scientists who don't realize there's a link between pumping filth into a child's eyes and corrupting his heart. Do you really want to send your kids to a secular state college? Well, I think not. All right. Now, let's move on to the bad religion file. from the bad religion file. Now, this story is a couple weeks old. We're all familiar with the death of Trayvon Martin. Well, Trayvon Martin was interviewed by, what's the guy's name?
No, not Trayvon.
Hannity. No, well, no, Trayvon was not interviewed. Is that what I said? Yeah. I apologize. George Zimmerman was interviewed by some hack. Yeah. Some hack who's got a TV show. Yeah, Hannity. So Hannity interviews George Zimmerman. And what does Zimmerman say? He says that he felt the course of the night the 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was killed was, quote, all God's plan, unquote. That's what George Zimmerman thinks, that it was all God's plan. Well, the parents of Trayvon Martin, well, they disagree. They say, we must worship a different God. That's what Trayvon Martin's father said. He said, and his mother said that notion was ridiculous, that this was part of God, that this was all God's plan, that Trayvon be shot and killed by George Zimmerman. Yeah. Zimmerman also said he'd like to talk with Trayvon Martin's parents about what happened, and they said absolutely not. And I happen to agree with them. I mean, you utter something that foolish and hurtful and ridiculous and blasphemous, frankly, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with you. All right. Let's say it's more in the interview with and Hannity said Republicans are good, Democrats are bad. And then he talked with Zimmerman some more, and then he reiterated how Barack Obama must be defeated, and then I think he interviewed Zimmerman some more. He asked a question about Trayvon Martin, and then he said Republicans are good, Democrats are bad. There was a little bit more banter back and forth between him and Zimmerman concluded by saying, I am not a racist, and I am not a murderer. And obviously, he's not a theologian either. Although, unfortunately, many theologians would agree with Mr. Zimmerman. Those guitars away. We got to finish the show. Billy, put it away. All right. Now, let's go on to the personhood file. If you've seen the video of abortionist Ashutosh Ron Virmani, this headline from Hot Air just amazes me. This is how Hot Air, which is a liberal, it's just a liberal cesspool on the internet. Their headline says, video. Abortionist challenges protesters to adopt ugly black babies. That's how Hot Air reports it. Anyway, that video was shot by some friends of mine, so I'm pretty excited about it. And I'm really glad that the truth has come out. But Hot Air, they really don't get it. They point out that there are actually three arguments from Virmani, two of which are often, and I'm assuming you've seen the video, folks. It's gone viral and all that. It's big news. They say there's a two arguments which are often made, and one which only rarely is made. Virmani almost certainly is assuming that pro-life Americans are racist by nature. He's supporting his position by assuming that conservatives would balk at adopting a child other than a Caucasian. It's a clear sign of bigotry, they say, on the part of the abortionist, the baby killer, Ron Virmani. They say that it's bigotry, but it's not the kind of racism that some have imputed to the child killer. The first argument they claim he made is that abortion rids a society of undesirable actors, and that is exactly the point that the abortionist made. He said they would all end up on welfare and all that, so implying that it would be better that we kill them. Well, that he actually personally kill them, which he does every day. Every day that he's working as an abortionist. Anyway. The second argument that Hot Air noticed from Mr. Virmani, abortionist, the use of the word ugly in connection to the usefulness of abortion underscores the utilitarian approach to human life on which the first argument relies. Well, that's not a bad job of reportage, Hot Air. That's obviously true. The last argument is that no one will want these children. But, Hot Air, even being a bunch of liberals, they have to be honest. They say that that argument's easily refuted by the lengthy wait times for adoption. That's right. There's There's millions of white, black, yellow, and brown people who are lined up to adopt these so-called unwanted fetuses. That's a big lie. And like my pastor says, even if none of us offered to adopt any of them, you still don't have the right to kill them. But we do offer to adopt them, and we will adopt them. I've offered on hundreds of occasions with pregnant women who were on their way to the abortion clinic. I've personally offered to take care of them and adopt their children. None of them took me up on it, but one did allow me to take care of her, and then she had her baby. So there. Anyway, what I wanted to get to with this hot air article is the author says this: despair is really the true disease at work here, not racism, not bigotry. It's despair. And despair is all that really profits in the end. The cure is hope and reaching those who are despairing with that hope before Vermani and his abortionist colleagues can make their sale. Anyway, to the author at Hot Air, I don't know who you are, don't know what your name is. Sin is the disease, and Jesus Christ is the cure. And you can either accept the offer of the cure that Jesus provides, or he is going to segregate you from those who have accepted the cure so that you cannot infect them. That's what hell is. Hell is simply putting you somewhere where you can't hurt the people who have accepted the cure. And that's where Mr. Vermani is headed, and that's where the writers at Hot Air are headed, unless they humble themselves and get on their knees and accept the fact that there is a God, that they're not him, and that they're going to meet him. Because if you'll simply humble yourself, God is trustworthy to offer you a way out of your sinful, destructive, wicked, and evil life. All right. Let's see. I got so much stuff. Oh, here we go. Now, how about this for a segue? Gonorrhea has now become resistant to all but one class of antibiotics and soon could become untreatable. This is from USA Today. That's right. Gonorrhea, I said. It's become drug resistant. By the way, that reminds me. Did you see Hillary Clinton doing that dirty dancing thing with that woman in Africa? Was that not disgusting? That looked like the live transmission of a venereal disease right there on camera. It was one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. Uh-oh, here she comes. She's got the jack. I had to mention Hillary's name. She's got the jack. Who's that now? She's got the jack. Yeah, I think she got it from that dirty dancing episode. That was... Was it just me? I mean, I thought it was really creepy. It was on par with Nancy Pelosi speaking to spirits at the White House, but this was like real in the flesh right there in front of God and everybody. That was disgusting. Yeah, all right. Let us have it. All right. Put the guitars away, boys. I said we've got to finish the show. Every time Hillary comes up, you know, there's, I guess I need to say no more. Anyway, a professor at a professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, according to USA Today, says we're at the end of the line on standard therapies for gonorrhea. Yeah. All right. Well, that's disturbing. But, you know, there's a line in the Bible about sexually immoral people receiving in their bodies the punishment that is due for their deeds. And, antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea, I think, fits right into that. All right. Amtrak has released some new ads targeted at homosexual couples. Yes, Amtrak has their new Ride with Pride ad campaign and encourages couples to go to gay-friendly destinations like Martha's Vineyard. I wasn't aware that Martha's Vineyard was well known as but I suppose it is. The program, according to Amtrak, and this is out of CBS in Washington, the program also lets children ride for half off. Disgusting. Like I said, with the homosexuals, it's always about cruising. Yeah, for young kids. Amtrak calls the diversity program a priority and says they have not received any backlash. In fact, they say they've received a lot of positive feedback about their Ride with Pride campaign targeting homosexual couples with kids' tickets half off. Yeah. Okay, that's just... anyway, I wasn't planning to ride Amtrak before, and frankly, not planning to anymore. Okay, this is from the Daily Beast, which I think is a bunch of unemployed Newsweek people. I think it is Newsweek now. Anyway, Attorney General Eric Holder has decided to accept a plea deal and not seek the death penalty for Jared Loughner, the gunman in the Arizona mass shooting last year. You all remember. Well, Gabby Giffords has released a statement issued by her husband. She says that the couple had been in touch with Eric Holder's office, and that while they can't speak for all the victims or their families, Gabby's husband says, quote, "Gabby and I are satisfied with this plea agreement. Avoiding a trial will allow us, and we hope the whole Southern Arizona community, to continue with our recovery and move forward with our lives." Well, Mr. Giffords, if that is your name, the opposite is true. Avoiding a trial is exactly what is the exact opposite of what needs to happen so that people can recover and get on with their lives. Loughner needs to be punished with extreme prejudice so that we can all move on. Loughner now admitted guilt in his court hearing. He surrendered his right to plead insanity, ensuring he will spend the rest of his life in prison, but his life will be spared. So why do reporters use such definitive language in a case like this? They say he's guaranteed, insured, he will spend the rest of his life in prison, and his life will be spared. They can't be definitive about anything else. You know, like this maniac in Aurora who opened up in the theater, they call him the alleged shooter. But in this case, Loughner, his life will be spared. And I just want to tell the reporters who wrote this story that the exact opposite is true. His life may be spared for a time, but his life will not be spared. He will be required to give an account and to pay the price for what he's done. And as Gabby Giffords says some more stuff, you know, but whatever, she's brain injured. I'm not going to pick up on her. I'm not going to pick on her. Last summer, when Congress raised the debt ceiling after a very bitter fight, Gabby Giffords unexpectedly came to the House floor and cast what would be her last vote as a member. And she remains a symbol of how lawmakers can overcome their differences and pull together. That's according to the authors there at the Daily Beast. You know what she stands as a symbol of? How the Congress can rob the Treasury blind and kill off as many innocent children as possible. Gabby Giffords is a symbol of lies, confusion, and bloodshed. Murder. That's what Gabby Giffords supported before she was shot, and that's what she continues to support. So I guess I am going to pick on Gabby Giffords. Is it too early to pick on her? How long after someone is shot can you criticize them? Well, the floodgates are open now, folks. I've crossed the Rubicon. All right. A couple quick ones here because we're almost out of time. Judge Rana Beck was walking. She's a Superior Court judge in Washington, D.C. She was walking with her law clerk and the clerk's boyfriend when two men with guns robbed them. Yeah. All three of these legal professionals turned over their valuables and were robbed. The stick-up was one of nine robberies or attempted robberies in Washington, D.C. on that day. They say no one was hurt and there have been no arrests. I don't know. I think if you've been robbed at gunpoint, I think you've been hurt. Yeah, I think so. I bet if you ask the judge, she would say she feels hurt, but she's generally confused as to why it could have happened and what should be done about it. Anyway, I just find it ironic that these judges who mete out corrupt justice, I always find it ironic and worth pointing out when they become the victims of the crime epidemic in which they have participated. A violent home invasion in Philadelphia. Authorities say home invaders beat a 51-year-old woman. They beat her with a plunger at 3:30 in broad daylight last Monday. The victim is an Asian female with mental disabilities. They hit her in the face with a rock. They used a rope and sticks and a potted plant. A family friend found the victim in the backyard on her knees crying and begging for her life to be spared. Police have been able to identify the suspects, a 7, a 10, and a 12-year-old boy. Yeah. By law, the 7-year-old is too young to be charged with a crime. Who would have ever thought that a 7-year-old would do something like that? We probably don't have any crimes on the books. We probably don't have any laws on the books to cover the kind of the state we're in. I guess that's it, folks. I have more stories from the justice file, but well, that's it. Anyway, congratulations to all my friends in putting personhood back on the ballot. We all appreciate your hard work and your help, and hopefully we can turn the hearts of the parents back toward their children and turn the hearts of our neighbors back to the living God before they meet him. Because when they do meet him, they'll be begging and praying that they had listened. But that's it for the show this week, folks. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, Personhood USA, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who's probably already fallen asleep by now. Daryl says he usually falls asleep during the third segment. Sorry I didn't wish you a good night, Daryl, but thanks for listening. All right, that's it. That's how we end the show, right? That's it. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.